What was that look, Zach? Hey, is that correct?
I mean,
does he push him off the planet?
Push him off the planet?
Hey, I don't know.
Just we're sending you adrift, idiot. Help. Help.
Help me. Dalek cannot float in space. I've been practicing it. I've been drawing it out on paper to see visually what Daleks sound like. I'm not autistic, but when I say things like that, I have to think about it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today, we're having a very special episode where we talk about how Cassie's hooked on drugs. I mean,
I'm not. No. I haven't ever had a drug.
Folks, we've had a lot of fun here today.
Yeah, we've been recording all day.
This is a very special episode that we had talked about after following two surprise special episodes. Today is our first look at a classic Doctor Who.
Hooray! Woo-hoo!
Today we are looking at the Fourth Doctor's serial, Genesis of the Daleks, as was determined by a poll I ran on our Twitter account, WIMDPOD, WIMDPOD. What are you expecting from Classic Who, Cassie?
Dalek. Lots of Dalek. Scarf. Hat.
You're referring to the Fourth Doctor, Tom Baker.
Tom Baker.
Or as we have called him a couple of times, Scarfy McBig Hat.
Scarfy McBig Hat. Yes.
So,
who could forget? Not I.
So, fun little fact about Tom Baker as a doctor. He was an actor prior to playing the Doctor, but he was not an actor getting work. So he was informed that he got the role of the Doctor while he was in the middle of laying bricks, building up. I think he built houses in the UK.
Wow. Relatable.
Yeah. So he brings this very kind of strange atmosphere to him. He's got a very very expressive face, partly because he looks like if someone was trying to draw a person, if that makes sense. He's got
that's so rude.
Well, no, I don't mean in a rude way. I mean, he's got a very big toothy grin. He's got very large expressive eyes.
If somebody was doing a police sketching of him, they would get it right.
Yeah. He's got big curly hair.
Distinct features, I would say.
Yeah. I think part of what made his doctor, I don't know if he was instantly big, but so iconic to so many people, is that he looks almost like it. He looks like someone pretending to be human in a way.
Okay.
So there's an atmosphere of him where it's just like he's a little off because he's got a very melodic voice that he talks with, and he's a lot of fun. And this is one of those stories that usually winds up on a top 10 Doctor Who stories. And for a long time, a lot of people put this at the top of their Tom Baker stories. This is just one of those that's really important to the history of the show. And it's written by Terry Nation, who is, I don't know if you remember the name, the Terry Nation estate is who owns the Daleks. They're his family are the people that license out the Daleks to Doctor Who every year. So Terry Nation,
the contractually obligated seasonal requirement of those nasty boys.
Yep, so this is, he wrote a lot of the Dalek stories. I don't know if he did it because he owned them and therefore felt like he was the person who had to write most of them, or if it was because they were his, everyone just let him do that.
Fair.
So he was tasked with writing a Dalek story for this season, and the way the story goes, the one he had written was good, but it was kind of derivative of other stories he had written.
According to what source, if you don't mind me asking?
the production team at the time
okay.
said that. So someone pitched the idea of going back to the creation of the Daleks, hence the name, the title of the story, Genesis of the Daleks. So this story is about the Doctor being sent back to the creation of the Daleks to try and stop the Daleks from becoming a problem.
Ah, unsuccessful.
What makes you say that?
Instinct.
Let's get into the Cassie Verfassi today.
Okay.
Because that's sort of where I've got one sort of serious one and one sort of silly one, mainly just to try and play it up here. We're not going to do, because Genesis of the Daleks is 6 episodes long, but the episodes of the classic season are shorter than of the modern season. The modern season stories are about 45 minutes long. The stories of this one were about 20 to 25 minutes long. So this will end up being about the length of a two-parter, but I'm still not going to have us take a break in between episodes like we do for two-parters, because I think it'd be a little weird for this first time. But we shall see how it feels. The first Cassie Verfassi is a little more plot relevant.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor does nearly destroy the Daleks.
I thought you were going to say, the Doctor does, and I was going to fill in the blank with, dance! He dances! We've seen him do that before!
No, he does nearly destroy the Daleks, and I'm going to have you guess how he does it.
Man. Okay.
Because I feel like it's very silly, but very simple.
Mm, okay.
Like how you can completely kill somebody in D&D and Baldur's Gate simply by shoving them into a chasm. May I ask follow-up questions?
Sure.
Can these Daleks fly?
Daleks cannot fly.
Can this one hover? Is this before or after?
This is before hovering. I believe they don't gain the ability to hover until the 7th Doctor.
Okay. So they very well could be pushed into a chasm. Because that was the hiccup.
Why don't we take the Daleks and push them somewhere else?
Yeah, well, because that's my thinking, is if they are, if they can be now stumped by stairs in this one, there is a non-zero chance that you can simply push a Dalek over down a very deep, dark well. Dalek can't get out a well. Dalek can't hover.
Help, I have been pushed down a well.
What is it, Lassie? Dalek's been pushed down a well.
Good. Leave him there. He deserved it.
Help me flotillate.
There's got to be one there somewhere.
Flotillate?
I don't know.
That's not a real word, Zach.
Neither is Dalek.
Yeah, but flotillate really isn't.
I can't
even yes and it. The bit just died. Like Daleks falling down a well.
I guess you should say the bit was exterminated.
Full circle.
So
I'm really hung up on Dalek down a well. I don't think that's correct. But if I don't guess anything else.
Dalek go down to hole.
Yeah, if I don't guess anything else, then I won't be upset, because this is the only thing I've said. And I'm really trying to think of other ways that Daleks have been harmed in future episodes, because I have the privilege of knowing the future, since we are going into the past. Mm-hmm. I know how they are now,
mm-hmm.
which means that I have a leg up in this. Because I also really like the idea of Scarfy McBig Hat running upstairs and having the Daleks go, oh no, we have been defeated. Dalek can't go upstairs.
If it would make you feel better, I do have a couple of multiple choice options I could give you if you...
Dalek cannot levitate.
If you would like some options, I could give you some options. Or if you would like to guess on your own, I will let you keep going where you're going.
Because you seem to not have any kind of reaction about falling down a well or being pushed into a chasm, which makes me feel like that's probably not correct.
Okay, well, you said that you had options for me though.
Okay, so you would like
yes,
your multiple choice.
I would like multiple choice.
So I'll give you three options and you can pick one of them.
Okay.
Does the Doctor A, destroy the factory that builds the Dalek machines.
Interesting.
B, blow up the Daleks as babies. Or C, try to gas the person that creates the Daleks.
So none of my options.
None of your options.
Okay,
no.
Good. I take comfort in that. let's see. Because B feels like the... B feels like the Hitler approach. And what I mean by that is you always hear the how would you stop the Holocaust from happening? It's very simple. Go back in time, kill Hitler.
Kill baby Hitler.
Yeah, kill baby Hitler. Wrongfully tell him that his art is actually very good and hope that he pursues a career in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not great, but Hitler's art isn't like the nastiest stuff I've ever seen. I've seen worse.
Yeah.
Cough, cough, Kincaid, cough, cough.
I was about to say Thomas Kincaid.
So it was gas the creator.
Yeah, gas the creator, blow up the babies, or smash the factory.
I think it's gas the creator.
Gas the creator?
Gas the creator.
Alrighty. So Cassie is guessing that the doctor nearly wipes out the Daleks by trying to gas the creator of the Daleks.
I know that's wrong. I know that that's going to be a plot point, but it's actually the factory that gets blown up. Can I call it? Can I get half a point if that prophecy's correct?
Sure. So Cassie is going for a sort of...
It's a back-assy Cassie prophecy,
which is that there's a plot point where the doctor tries to gas Davros, but instead they smash the Dalek factory. All right, and the sillier question I have here for you that I think you're just going to have a little bit of fun with is at one point in this story, the doctor is forced to empty his pockets.
No!
What do you?
No!
I'll just let you name a few things, and you could. And if you guess some stuff right, we'll give you a point. What do you think is in the doctor's pockets?
Cass Smeagol is not happy about this question. What is in doctor's pockets? Fuck. I really wish I could do a Smeagol impression at this moment.
Well, pockets is in doctor's pockets.
I can't do that.
I can do it for you.
Thank you.
What would you like me to say?
Can you just say Cass Smeagol is unhappy?
Cass Smeagol is unhappy.
Thank you. Someone need to teach me how to do that, bud. How many items? Do I have to guess all the items?
I'll let you guess five, and if one of them is right. Because this question is super open-ended. So I'll let you guess five. If one of them is right, you'll still get the point.
Ring of power, a thread. I'm not, these aren't actual guesses. I do think string is a pretty valid response. String feels like rope.
Yeah. We'll accept string as a category.
I just also watched Mouse Hunt and they were talking about how important a piece of string is, not thread, string.
Can I tell you the really funny thing about this question?
What?
I came up with this when I first sat down to watch this episode to take notes and such. I have since forgotten most of the things in his pocket. So you can't even look to me for help. I only remember two things that are in the pocket.
Because I know one of them would most likely be what the 10th Doctor establishes as the sonic screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
Has it always been a sonic screwdriver?
Yes, it has always been a sonic screwdriver.
So that for sure. String. Okay. I wrote down an acorn.
An acorn? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you as a wacky Cassie wish you had in your pocket?
A small rock.
A small rock.
I mean, for me, I do have rocks in my pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I have two gemstones that are supposed to help clear my mind and give me energy while I'm at work. They make me excited when I open my pocket and remember I have them. So I suppose that's where the energy comes from, is my unbridled joy at flat rocks in my pocket.
All right, you got one more.
I know. Okay. It's not a fidget spinner. Those weren't around yet.
Like a Rubik's Cube?
Well, because I'm trying to think of, like, realistically, it could be something that is like a fidget toy, because I could definitely see the doctor
like a spinning top or a yo-yo.
Yeah. Can I just write down toy?
Sure, you can write down toy.
Okay.
All right, let's go over your list one whole time real quick.
So, the five things in the doctor's pocket in order... from most logical to stupid. So, sonic screwdriver.
A toy.
a piece of string,
an acorn, and a small rock.
I enjoy the distance between, like, from most logical to least logical. I enjoy the distance in that gap from sonic screwdriver to toy.
Yeah. I did think about it. He could have snacks in his pocket, but I don't think I've...
The only thing that the doctor, I feel like we've ever seen him consume is tea.
But I don't.
We didn't even see him consume it. We just saw it get steamed through his head.
He sniffed the tea.
She's still mad about that.
Broke his trance that disrupted his slumber. Tea is not in his pocket.
Alrighty.
I'm going to be so angry, though, if it is. Oh, my God.
Well, let's find out how correct the Cassie Profassi is as we watch Genesis of the Daleks. And if you would like to watch Genesis of the Daleks with us, you can find it on, if you're in the UK, it's on BritBox. I know that much. If you're in the US, you can watch it for free with ads on Tubi. Otherwise, we're watching it on the Blu-ray that I have. I'm sure it's available in other countries. Just look it up. I'm pretty sure it should be easy to find. It's one of the most popular things in the world. So we'll find out how correct the Cassie Profassi was after we watch Genesis of the Daleks.
Hooray. Hooray? I'm working on it.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by the number 3. Did you know that 3 is a magic number? It's true. Why, last week the number 3 pulled a penny out of my ear. And then my car keys out of my pocket. And then drove away. The number 3 stole my car. Please, if you see the number 3, call the police. I need that car. And we are back from Genesis of the Daleks.
I was going to try to think of a Dalek thing to say, but I can't. I cannot.
Well, let's...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Finger chair.
Yeah, Davros is the main villain of the piece.
Antagonist?
Yeah, he's the antagonist, and he... rolls around in a chair where the back of it straight up looks like a hand giving you a middle finger.
He's giving you the middle finger the entire time.
Yeah.
Which, like, accurate.
So I guess let's just maybe just do like a very broad stroke here. How do you feel about it? Because this is your first time going back to a classic series.
Yeah,
like this.
we got a new doctor. I got a new doctor.
We did get a new doctor.
Which means it's time for... Who is my doctor? Woof.
Well, do we want to talk about the fourth doctor before we decide what dog he is?
Yeah, well, that's why we're prefacing it now with this is a bit that I came up with where I figure out what kind of dog each doctor is.
Yeah, so the fourth doctor, Tom Baker, he's very silly, but in a very, like, dry kind of way.
This is, I think, one of the first time, granted, I think... The doctors I've seen now can be chalked up to 3. I have now seen 3 different doctors.
That is true.
He is the least arrogant doctor.
Which is funny because Tom Baker behind the scenes was incredibly arrogant to the point where he questioned why he even needed companions to begin with. The show was about him.
Interesting.
Yeah. One of the other episodes that I had put up on the poll was an episode called The Deadly Assassin, which is a terrible title, but that was the only... That episode has no companion because Tom Baker really thought he could carry an episode, a story entirely on his own, and he neglected to remember that sometimes you need the companions because the doctor needs someone to talk to.
Doctor needs someone to talk to. Also, more often than not, at least in this particular episode... If one of the companions was not with him, the other was enacting the B plot.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny to know that I think Tennant plays maybe the most arrogant doctor, but he seems to be one of the least arrogant actors. Meanwhile, Tom Baker was an alcoholic megalomaniac by the end of his run. because he just believed the show didn't need anybody else.
Which is so disappointing to hear, because yeah.
He seems to have mellowed out in his old age.
Hearing his humble beginnings as just a guy who's needing to work and not getting any work as an actor, so decides to just pick up a job. Very relatable. Granted, this is also Los Angeles, California, where literally everywhere you go, there is somebody who is I went to school for acting, but now I work as a waiter, a waitress, a barista, a barista.
I think part of what happened with Tom is that he became so instantly iconic because, one, he's got a very unique look, especially compared to...
He's easy to draw.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say... Well, he's not easy to draw in the sense that he's like, there's not... there's because there's a ton of detail and a lot of color.
Well, yeah, but it's not like, oh, he's got kind of a roundish sort of, like, No, he's got a very, like, long face, extraordinarily curly hair.
Yeah, and you can't...
Very prominent teeth.
Yeah, you cannot like if you design the silhouette of the Fourth Doctor, you cannot mistake him for anything else.
No, to the point I'm gonna prove my point. Doodle.
As we're going over this Doctor here, so as you could tell, the obvious thing that everyone points out is the enormous scarf.
Why with the big old
there's a fun story behind it.
Yeah, because it was dragging on the floor most of the time.
So the wardrobe designer...
Or no, I remember you telling me this, that this was a test scarf of, here are several different samples of colors, textures, just all knitted together.
Yeah, the costume designer was a man named James Atchison, who didn't know a lot about knitting, and so he brought a bunch of wool to... a friend of his named Begonia Pope, who does know how to knit. And I've heard this story told two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I can't verify which of these is true because I keep hearing it the other way. It is either he brought a bunch of wool to her with the expectation that she would make a scarf out of it, and he didn't know how much wool she needed. So he brought her a bunch and she could figure it out. Or that she made one long scarf with the expectation they would take just a chunk out of it. And Tom Baker instead went, I want all of it. And they kept all of it. So all of the wool that was brought to Begonia is that scarf. one way or the other, that is how it happened. I don't know if she misunderstood or he misunderstood, but someone misunderstood the assignment and it sailed off into the skies anyway.
I do really love and respect that, because as somebody who is oftentimes tasked with odd requests, I will 9 times out of 10 do the absolute most for that request.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a barista. You know this. If anybody doesn't know, I'm a barista. Sometimes we get orders for drinks that say 16 ounce oat milk latte, hot, lavender, no espresso. Yes, the Italian word for steamed milk is latte. So either they do just want like a vanilla steamer, or they think that there is they're being tasked with choosing the specific type of espresso, and therefore they don't want to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, the response to that would be, I will simply make you exactly what you ordered. But I know that you're wrong, so I'm going to make you the entire drink twice. I'm going to make it the way that you ordered it, and then I'm going to make it again the way that you actually want it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that is just putting the espresso on the side. They can, red pill, blue pill, they can make their own choice. But that is very common then to be, if you are handed these, I'm assuming we'll pretend it's a basket of wool yarn and are being tasked with knitting a scarf. You gave me all this product. Does that mean that you want a scarf using all of the product? Do you want me to take artistic liberty and make choices for you? I'm the machine in this. I'm not making any creative decisions. I am just doing the thing that you are incapable of doing. And this isn't now where you can simply send a text and say, hey, what do you want? So I can 100% see the moral dilemma happening with Ms. Begonia going, I don't know what to do, so I will just do the most. Everything I can with this wool yarn that I've been handed, and they can make the choice from there. Which, I do love the big dumb scarf. It's very silly. It also drags on the floor like it's nobody's business.
Yeah, it's funny because there are times just throughout his tenure where he will double wrap the scarf so it's like really bunched up around him. At one point, he gets another scarf that's even bigger.
Jesus Christ.
Like it's I think it's the same length, but it, or maybe it's even, maybe it's a little bit longer, but it's like twice as wide and it's like all shades of red.
Cool.
Yeah, that's in his later tenure. You can also see, you also saw many times that he had a big wide
fedora
felt hat.
Yeah, like an Mbiampa Jones.
Yeah, that was another piece that they made. And then they made a variety of jackets for him.
Okay. I did like that at some points he was just wearing a red jacket and a brown overcoat. And then the brown overcoat would get abandoned somewhere. But then later scenes, the brown overcoat would be on again. Which I know it's just a... It's
this took too long to film. We can't quite remember.
Yeah, that's a the continuity of a lot of things. The coat does not matter. This is in real life taking 6 weeks to air. Nobody's going to fucking remember where the coat ended up and what he was wearing in XYZ scene.
Yeah.
I do like the narrative that at some point the doctor finds a coat rack and goes, ah, perfect.
Well, it is kind of funny because he, a lot, like I said, they made the hat, they made the scarf, they made the jacket. But a lot of the other stuff he wears is just Tom Baker's clothes. Like, I don't know if you saw, but underneath that scarf, he also had, I think, at least one, maybe two neckties.
Or like a neckerchief.
The waistcoat, I believe, is his. It's just really funny how much of Tom Baker himself is infused in this
iteration
of the Doctor.
Which makes sense if you are imbuing, yes. If you're imbuing parts of yourself into this character, why then you would, you know, take a lot of pride and ownership of the character. Also, I thought the coat was much longer.
There is a longer coat.
There is a longer coat.
He has four or so coats. He's got, okay, he's got this little red one. He's got a long brown one. He's also got...
was there a long red one as
there
well?
There is a long... When he gets the red scarf, his outfit in general is very red.
But was there a long red one in this one?
I don't believe so, no. But yes, I think one of my favorite little moments to define this doctor came very early on, where another Time Lord shows up and starts to give him the task, and he's like,
that
whatever.
Time Lord looks like a big nerd.
He's like, whatever it is, I won't do it. And he's like, well, it's about Daleks. Daleks, tell me more. And you can see just like the look on his face and the sudden turnaround defines so much of this doctor to me.
Yeah,
because he's like, he's a little silly. There's also like a business sense about him, but he feels like the fun manager. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. What did you feel about the fourth Doctor?
I'm proving a point that he's easy to draw, but right now it just kind of looks like an old woman. I've already said he was the least arrogant of the like Doctor portrayals, and I don't know if he intended this. But I feel like Christopher Eccleston took some... It wasn't until... and I will get to this in more detail later on. But when the Doctor is specifically struggling with the moral dilemma of that he has the ability to completely exterminate the Dalek babies. Which,
yeah.
I was wrong. I was so very wrong about that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
but I do like that in that moment it was a very, not tortured necessarily, because this doctor is before the Time War. So he doesn't have the same sort of like emotional baggage. And
yeah, it's really interesting to see like the stark contrast where he gets the opportunity to exterminate all Daleks. And he's like, do I have the right to do that? Cut to the ninth Doctor screaming at the last Dalek in existence to die.
Have I that right?
To destroy the Daleks, you can't doubt it.
But I do.
You all burn, all of you. 10 million ships on fire. The entire Dalek race wiped out in 1 second.
You lie!
I watched it happen.
I made it happen!
You destroyed us!
Yeah.
which I liked. I do like being able to see the differences.
Yeah.
And I suppose that could also be why modern doctors are a little bit more arrogant, because they are the last of their species. This one isn't.
Yeah, he's modern doctors have almost like the opposite of survivor's guilt. They have like survivor's bias, where they believe that because they survived, they are the best.
Because this one did also have a specific sense of, like, not invincibility, but when tasked with saving his friends or doing something to save everyone, he goes, great, I'm going to go and do this thing to potentially save everybody. You guys go. Get out of here. Don't worry about me. Go. Scram. Take this. Take the time bracelet. The MacGuffin time bracelet. You take it, Sarah.
The ring of power.
Yeah, you take it, Sarah. You guys save yourselves.
Yeah.
Which I do like that, because the Doctor is kind of invincible. Mm-hmm. And so if you do have that ability, why wouldn't you do things to potentially save hundreds of thousands of people?
Yeah, especially at this point in the Doctor's life. I can't remember exactly what point they introduced the concept, but Time Lords can regenerate they can regenerate 12 times, so there can be 13 total Time Lords in a given line. So he's the fourth. So he's like, I've got 9 lives stocked up, baby. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. He did have a cat-like quality about him as well.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that to him. We're not deciding if he's a cat. We're deciding what kind of dog he is.
I mean, we did say Eggleston was a cat, so. Doctor, dogters can be cats. I did write Cheshire Cat as one of the options, but he's not as, like, mischievous. Yeah,
he's got that big, toothy grin.
Yeah, that was, like, physically, physicality, Cheshire Cat, for sure.
Yeah.
But not personality. He's not quite as, like, sneaky and, like, mischievous.
Mm-hmm. So what is your theory about who the fourth Doctor is?
Oh, he's a Borzoi for sure.
A Borzoi, okay.
Yeah, you know what that is, right?
Yeah, the didn't I do it for you?
Yeah, do you want to see?
Well, I thought we had also said that was what Eccleston was.
Okay, but come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, he also, and it may just be the hair that's doing it for me. He's got,
like, look at this gangly freak. You can't say that isn't. I take back what I said about Eccleston. He 100% is a cat. Tom Baker is a Borzoi.
Well, it's funny because I think the hair is doing a little bit for me, but I look at him and he's got like a labradoodle quality.
Don't make me get on my labradoodle soapbox again.
Because he does feel a little like, you know, he's got the thick, curly hair. He wears so many layers, so that's got to be some high-maintenance shit. He's got this, like, very silly quality about him where it seems like even when he's being serious, it seems more like he only really gets serious when he gets tuckered out.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to say for sure. I will say that I did find...
I mean, you're not incorrect about Labradoodle.
I will say that there was an artist who made, after we talked about it, I did look it up. There was an artist who made various pictures of the Doctors as dogs.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to guess what they made the fourth Doctor?
What?
They picked a flandoodle, I think is what it's called.
A flandoodle?
Yeah.
What are you? The first thing Google says is Flanders? Thank you so much, Google.
I will show you the picture that they drew of him.
Good God. And a cross between a Bouvier de Flandre and a poodle.
And Tennant, they picked a Chihuahua.
You know, that's not incorrect.
And then for Eccleston, they picked a Doberman.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll come back to these other pictures as we do more Who Is My Doctor, but...
Who is my doctor?
I want to credit this artist first.
Who is my doctor? Woof!
This was by an artist on DeviantArt called T. Chiron. They are the ones who made.
So is that just going to be our definitive list then?
No, I don't think it'll be the definitive one, but it'll be a nice third opinion in this panel of two.
Flandoodle.
But Cassie's pick for that is Borzoi. I like Labradoodle. And I think the artist was mainly going for ones that were visually similar. So
yeah.
So when they picked Flondoodle, it was, I think,
just because Borzoi's art—they're so strange. They're such weird look. They're weird looking. The personality of a Borzoi is not quite dog, not quite cat.
Which, you know, that all fits.
Going back a little bit, just because we're at the top of my notes right now, visually on my page, I could not have been more incorrect about the Cassie Profassi in what the doctor was going to do with Davros. I was correct on three accounts.
Yeah.
For what was in the doctor's pockets.
Yeah,
what
was in the doctor's pockets? There was the sonic screwdriver was in there. There was a yo-yo.
There was a spyglass. As Haley said, a loop.
Yeah, like a jeweler's loop.
A mouse trap, a stick, a rock, handcuffs, a tissue.
Oh, it wasn't just a rock. It was like a gemstone, but we are counting it as rock. Yes.
Yes.
But yes, you do get a point for that, Profassi, but you...
Sonic screwdriver, a rock, and a toy are my 3 points, which I think 3 out of 5, pretty decent.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So yes, let's talk about Davros a little bit.
Yeah.
This is your...
this big fucking nerd.
Yeah, I think I showed you a picture of him when we first started talking about the Daleks.
Maybe.
But this...
Because I can imagine my reaction being, ew.
Yeah, because he's really gross.
He's unpleasant to look at.
Yeah, but there's a lot of...
I do really love his little microphone.
Yeah, his little microphone that lets him sound like a Dalek.
Only when he starts getting really loud and in the higher register, then he sounds more like a Dalek, which I think is very silly.
I really like the sort of subtextual storytelling they do with him, where they don't need to tell you what happened to Davros, but clearly a lot has happened to Davros, where he... Because he's the same race as the other Khaled's.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, his skin looks like it is melting. He has no eyes. He is strapped into a wheelchair and only kind of has use of one arm.
He has one eye. He's got like a third one.
Yeah, but those aren't his eyes. Those are like, that's a piece of technology he showed in his forehead.
That is technically an eye,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah, I meant he does not.
He genetically modified himself to not have eyeballs.
Yeah, he did something happened where he does not need his eyeballs. There's little details, like it seems like his head is bolted into this thing that he's strapped into.
Yeah, I do think that the chair giving everybody the finger, it was accidental, but also kind of intentional.
Yeah, it's also, you know,
it's him saying he doesn't give a single fuck about himself, about who he was, where he came from. All he truly cares about now is what he has become and what he has created.
Yeah, it's about power and it's about being able to... Because I feel like the subtext here is that Davros was... Whatever happened to him put his life severely at risk to the point where now his only real thoughts are legacy. Which means that he wants to be like a name that is plastered in the stars. So that's why when the doctor would you allow a virus that kills all things? Like, would you release it? And because the implication is that Davros would die as well. And he's like, yes, I think I would do it. I would crush it. And I would, you know, have that sort of power.
It's the specificity of him saying that, like,
to hold in my hand a capsule that contains such power. To know that life and death on such a scale was my choice. To know that the tiny pressure on my thumb, enough to break the glass, would end everything. Yes.
And it was like, he's really, really thinking about this, which is also canon. Davros created COVID-19.
We've solved the mystery, folks. It wasn't a lab in China. It was Davros on Skaro.
It wasn't a lab. It wasn't bats. It was Davros.
It was a melting man in a wheelchair.
In a little one, or I was going to say a one wheeler, but I'm also, can we just take a sec? I am so impressed by how smooth everything on wheels is.
Yeah.
Davros and his little half Dalek, all of the other Dalek boys.
Yeah, because we talked about even in the new series when the Daleks are like talking, they wobble around a little bit.
When Daleks are being expressive, they gotta wiggle, so that way you know.
Which I don't know if that jank is... That jank might be on purpose in the new series.
It feels way more intentional.
Yeah. But these were also a different... You've seen like a solid black one and you've seen mostly bronze when these ones were like a gray-green.
These ones looked 3D printed, which I was really trying to like parcel out because that wasn't a thing in the 70s.
Yeah, another thing that they do is not... Is one thing that's missing here from that's present in the modern series is every once in a while, one of the Daleks' lights don't turn on when they're talking.
Yes.
It's very clear, like, the camera is focused on one. They're supposed to be talking, but their lights are not going off. But other times they do. And that's just one of those little things that, you know, you can catch when you have the money that the BBC does now as opposed to then.
Mm-hmm.
And they also established that Davros, his wheelchair also has his life support systems in it.
Yeah, and it's just a single button.
Yeah, a button that he is constantly, like, tapping hovering very over. Close to.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure there's some, I don't know if that was the subtext he was going for, because but it does feel like he's always moments away from, like, killing himself.
He constantly has the power and the ability to take his own life at any second he chooses. His life is in his own hands.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, as far as we know, Davros is kind of not immortal, but is impenetrable.
He's at least very, very old. And he's, you know, clearly modified his own body to be kind of Dalek-like. Beyond just the wheelchair, you know, he's got the one eye in his forehead, much like where the Dalek's eye stalk is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Sarah Jane and Harry.
Harry!
You've already met Sarah Jane. You've met the older Sarah Jane Smith.
Yes.
You didn't pick up on that being the same Sarah at first.
No, I was too distracted by how wonderful her hair is. Frankly, that was the one... That was the giveaway for me, figuring out what time period this was her mile thick bangs. That's yes, the '70s, baby.
The story aired in March and April 1975.
I was thinking 74. I was very close.
I mean, they probably filmed it in 74.
Okay, sick.
You've already met Sarah Jane. Sarah Jane was a reporter, Harry is a surgeon for the United Nations Intelligence Task Force, which is a ally of the Doctor that you have not met. They are they're similar to Torchwood in that they are a government agency that is tasked with aliens. UNIT is sort of like the good coin to Torchwood's bad coin. You'll meet them as we keep going in the classic series, but did you get any strong vibes off of Sarah or Harry?
No.
Did you like it when Harry's leg got caught in a giant clam?
In Clamantha? Yes.
Yeah, I like that Sarah is, you know, when she gets taken prisoner to work on this rocket ship, she's the one who's mm-hmm. like, hey, aren't we gonna, like, escape?
As, like, the only thing that really uber super bummed me out is the fact that it was Sarah and then a girl named Bennett. And those are the only two women in this whole thing.
Yeah, that is a major problem with just this era. Like I mentioned earlier, The Deadly Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to having no companions, that story has no women in it at all. There's not a single female character in it.
Which, like, I get it. It's the 70s. It's the BBC. They have the Radiophonic Workshop credited, but no Delia Derbyshire. I'll die angry because of that.
This was also your first time seeing another Time Lord.
Yeah. You mean a big dork with a dumb big black collar and a little hood.
So that is kind of what the Time Lords are like.
No,
they're main...
I thought this was a choice by the one.
No, the main way you can tell a Time Lord from other characters, because they're, you know, they're all played by humans, is they really like big doofy collars.
No. Why? That's stupid.
The big doofy headpieces. It's very silly. but it's it. There's something about it where you're like, this is so stupid, it must be real.
Yeah, I mean, if you call yourself a Time Lord,
yeah,
you kind of have to look like a big dink. Like that, that's something that is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's it comes with the title. It's in the job description. Looking like a dink.
Oh, it's what you see on the tin.
Yeah. But I will say, before we get in too deep, something that I adore about 70s television, or TV that is, you know, it less so, I think...
Before the high-definition era.
Well, because even, like, a lot of times, like, in the 80s, you don't see a lot of it. Granted, there, at least, I can't really think of any off the top of my head that have to do with space,
mm-hmm.
aside from, like, Mork and Mindy, but even that's not really space, because it's... They're in a house. Yeah. Anyways, there's something very small, and I can't quite describe... I can't describe it any more than that, where everything just feels very close and very tight.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that has to do with the fact that these are all sets that are being built on smaller sound stages. So you do need to get pretty tight shots of everybody. And in an effort to make the room look bigger, everything is covered in aluminum foil or Mylar, which is so silly. And there was a moment in particular where they get on this little, like, go-kart. It's like a go-kart mine cart, but it's being pulled along. And they're in this very small hallway, and there's absolutely no sound. And it's just so awkward.
Yeah, there's a few times where, and it's clearly like I don't know if it was a limit of the technology or a limit of budget, where they can't really beef out the sounds of fights.
No.
It's just whatever it sounded like on set.
The number of times people get quietly bonked on the head and, like, punched in the back. There were, I want to say, 3 different occasions where somebody comes up behind another person and then just kind of makes a motion like they're being stabbed, but nobody has any knives.
Yes, or some of my favorites. And this is things that I don't think you could catch on the original televisions, but now that it's blown up on our widescreen television, you can see, like, when the Daleks shoot people, the people that are falling down look very quickly, like, off to the side as to where they're going to fall.
That's another thing. Because of the technology at the time, when Dalek shoots people, it's just
a film negative.
It's just a film negative, baby.
Yeah, in the modern series,
their skeletons don't electrify and then liquefy out of their body. They just kind of fall over in negative.
Why don't we talk about the story a little bit now that we've talked about, I think, the big broad strokes here.
I'm embarrassed by how long it took me to realize that the Khaleds were English Nazis.
Yeah, they do a little salute. I don't know if you just looked away at that moment or if it took... Because
no,
you seemed to catch
I
it
had...
when one of them had, like, an iron cross on their neck piece.
Here's the thing. I had the original half-baked thought, but I went, nah, this isn't about space Nazis. That's already been done. This can't
that was
be.
That was done by the Daleks. Oh, my God.
I know. Well, that was exactly what my thought process went was. No, these aren't space Nazis. That's what Daleks are. These are Dalek creators. And then
they said Khaleds is what their name was.
Yeah. And I will congratulate myself for hearing that they were called Khaleds and going, oh, cool. It's an anagram. I've never been able to do that. It's a new skill.
I don't know if it makes you feel better or worse. It is just the first and last letter flipped around.
I don't care, Zach. I'm kind of dumb.
K-A-L-E-D-S. Why, that's an anagram of...
All right, you don't take me to escape rooms because I'm good at them. You take me to escape rooms because I'm the charisma hire for the group.
You're the bard. So when we get into the story at first...
Well, no, we're still talking about space Nazis.
Yeah.
They do their little salute, which is just both of them instigating a high five, but the other one not wanting to finish it because they're too proud.
They point this out. I don't know if it's super obvious because millennials... for some reason don't age. So we don't notice this, but General Raven is in his 20s, like in his early 20s. So it's very clear that the Khalid, like, the war is not going well for anyone in particular, mm-hmm. but the Khalids, especially, like, their generals are college-age kids.
Yeah. Their generals are exceedingly young.
Yeah.
And that could also be largely due to the fact that there are no women, so there are no more children.
Yeah, or because, as we saw outside, their bunkers are lined with corpses to make it look like there are to make it look like the bunkers are full.
Even the dead have a part to play, propped up to make the trenches appear fully manned.
There's a very real chance that all the older generals have died, and he's just the guy that's left.
Like, seemingly there is nobody really left.
Yeah. Which, and it seems like a lot of that is because they funneled their research into this wackadoo crazy man.
They gave all of their money to Devros.
Yeah. And so, because he basically promised to be their savior, and his way of saving them was to mutate them into squid people.
Now, is he mutating people or animals? Because I got the impression it was animals.
They said that he started his tests on animals.
Okay.
But now he's at the point in his research where the Khalids can reach their final point in mutation.
Okay, because there is a part where they're in seemingly a habitat with an alligator and giant clams, and that is it.
Yeah, those were some of his early experiments where he was still learning, I guess, how to make evil creatures.
How to make more dangerous animals.
Yeah, that was how Davros was making his advancements. Meanwhile, the Thals, their entire military force seemed to be funneled into building a rocket to make stuff explode.
A rocket, yeah. They're building a full-on bomb.
Yeah, they're building effect. Like, they give it some space gobbledygook where it's...
Yeah, space gobbledygook also boils down to the very base of the rocket where somebody went, we need to elude that this is a rocket, but we don't actually know what the bottom of a rocket looks like.
Only the Americans and the Russians have rockets and they won't let us see one.
My specific words were... Yeah, they're really out here taking wild stabs in the dark at what the bottom of rockets look like.
But yeah, they give it some space gobbledygook where instead of it being a nuclear missile, it's full of like some other...
radioactive...
harmful thing that causes, quote, dystronic toxemia.
Yeah, Zach, you're the resident doctor here. Is that real?
No, it's not real.
Okay.
Dystronic toxemia.
Well, because you had made another joke about it, jibe about, like, influenza. And I was like, yeah, is that real? I don't know these things.
Yeah, dystronic toxemia really messes with the squiggles in your phalange. And when your phalange gets all squiggled out, you get schmumbles. Have you ever had schmumbles?
I think I'm getting them right now.
You know, the Thals were building this rocket. Meanwhile, their soldiers seem to have wildly disparate equipment.
Where are all of the guns?
Yeah, well,
where is all of the equipment?
The Khalid said that that ammunition was in really low supply, so I think there's a part at the end where they're all holding guns, but none of them fire it when the Daleks roll in. There's a very real chance those are unloaded guns.
However, they also just kind of have explosives hanging out in lockers.
Yeah, they have C4. That's what they have.
Just straight chilling alongside spare uniforms and detonators. Like, use that.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught this at the very beginning. They find two of the Thals wearing gas masks and they grab their guns. One is like a disintegrator ray and the other is like a musket. And so he makes the point. They've been at war for so long that it's just whatever they have. They don't seem to have adequate technology for at their level modern war.
I will say I was really hopeful when I saw the gas masks because I went, oh, it's foreshadowing.
The Thals go, are you my mummy?
No. Frightening. No, don't bring that up. There were a couple moments where things felt like they were supposed to be funny and mm-hmm. weren't a laugh. But they just kind of don't, because comedy in scripts like that is so different now.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, it was the doctor talking to the other doctor.
Do you have any inkling of the theory of space dimension correlated to relative time?
And then that's when, like, an alarm goes off, a siren.
Davros comes in.
That's yeah, and so there's a part of me that's like, I know that that's supposed to be funny. Because that's a very big, broad topic. But it's just not.
See, I think it's mainly because I think the real joke was when he was like, well, we'll see what you really are. And he pulls up their genetic scan and he goes, what? This says you're not from around here. You got no match with anything. I don't know why that's what I made him sound like.
Yeah, that didn't sound like anybody in the show, bud. New choice.
Well, I don't know that I can really appropriately convey a voice to that man's magnificent eyebrows.
Yeah.
Man, that man had, like, snow-white hair, but the darkest eyebrows I've ever seen on a human being.
Monochromatic, except for his eyebrows. It's incredible.
And of course, that's the person that the doctor is conveniently handed off to, is the same guy that is the most willing to tell Davros to fuck off.
Since we're talking about people's looks, though, another thing I really, really super loved is the fact that you could see the seams on Davros's gloves.
Yeah, another thing that's definitely not supposed to be the case. It's just because we have much higher definition TVs now.
Higher definition TV, bigger TV.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of it that still works where it looks like the skin on his hands is like fraying.
Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah. It isn't intentional, but
it works.
Yeah, it's something where, as a designer, you look at something like that and go, nobody's going to notice. It's not blatant enough. Kind of like how you can very clearly see where the prosthetic ends because it, like, goes right around the actor's mouth. And then there's a little bit that attaches to his chin. But everything else, his mouth is completely...
Yeah, they just put makeup over it to blend it in.
Which is also helpful for him, so that way he can enunciate.
Yeah.
Enunciate! And really, really get in there.
And they made his teeth, like, black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever happened to him, like, really messed him up.
Oh, he's horrid.
Yeah. And they first introduce the Daleks, not as a Dalek, but as a Mark III travel machine.
Dalek. Primitive, but undeniably a Dalek.
No mistaken. It's a Mark III travel machine.
Which I think is also what they called Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Probably.
But because the Doctor preemptively knew they were going to be called Daleks, that's why everyone believes he's a time traveler.
He says, you said Dalek an hour before Davros did. You must be from the future. Like, Yowry just switched the letters in what you call yourselves.
Yeah, he got a hold of some notes, or he heard them through the door. There's a whole lot of rational explanations there.
But that's, I mean, such a flimsy excuse. Yeah. I loved it. I would make the same rash assumption if somebody said the name of a thing an hour before the creator announced the name of the thing.
Yeah, and Davros has this lackey that follows him around, Niter.
Spider.
Who's just... I mean, good on them for finding a dude that just looks like, yeah, you seem really evil. Just,
yeah, Slughorn.
Yeah, you look evil.
He looked like Slughorn.
And he talks like this everywhere he goes. And to credit to that actor, he does a very good job when he comes in pretending to be, like, on the side of the Resistance, where he's like, I need to speak with you in private. Davros has gone mad.
He's a megalomaniac.
Yeah.
It was at that word that me and Garam went, I think he's onto something. I think he's telling the truth. He used the word megalomaniac.
You don't just pull out $3 words like that without...
without intention?
Yeah, without intention. When they start having the conversation where he reveals the other people that have turned against Davros, they don't have to do anything to, like, really spell it other than just have the actor, like, suddenly switch postures.
Who can you count on?
Carvel, Frenton, Paren, but there'll be more soon, I'm sure of it.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
And, like, you just get it immediately. I think there might be a music sting there, but I think a lot of it is carried by just that actor.
It's the look on his face,
yeah,
too.
Change the look on his face, exactly.
in his eyes. The eyes have it. Which you had also made a comment about how you liked. It was a specific quality about the camera in low light settings like this.
Mm-hmm.
But also that it was a lower light setting. So it did lend itself to a more mysterious and...
Yeah, there's a fun little when these older cameras are going in low light a lot, those cameras are basically having to fill in the image.
Yeah.
So there, some places it's kind of guessing what the image is, and as such, there's some like weird motion blur artifacts, and it just I don't like it in the sense like I don't think it's good, but I like it in that it's a visual way, the same way the Dalek's voice like scratches your brain, where I'm just like, man, it's just there's something about that just really like. Feels good.
Well, because I had also pointed out too that you could specifically see at times when people were moving streaks of red, blue, and green behind them just because of the quality of
light. There were quite a few times where reflections were coming off surfaces and you could get like that pink fuchsia color just because that was the wavelength that was hitting the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've talked a lot about the big broad strokes of the story.
Of the A plot. Glossing over Sarah Jane and her muto friends.
Yeah, her muto friends loading up a rocket. Well, granted, it doesn't really go on that long.
It truly doesn't.
Yeah, its main premise seems to showcase that Davros eventually betrays the Khalids because he really only cares about his own success.
Yeah, his own...
creation.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Daleks. So it's a nice, like, B thread that loops... the gay thread back in. It's very, I think that's a very well written component.
Mm-hmm.
The mutos are a little weird because they describe them as being like these mutated freaks, but we only really kind of see that one has some stuff on his face.
Yeah, everybody else just kind of has a limp.
Yeah, everyone else.
Or is wearing a gimp suit.
Oh, yeah, that's the security guards wearing straight up gimp suits.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're a freak.
That's what you're into, I guess.
Yeah.
Near the end of the very last story, the doctor, as you misguessed, you guessed literally every option but the thing that happened, whereas the doctor...
Yeah, I understand that, Zach. I know. I'm aware.
In the incubation room for the new Daleks.
I'm really glad, though, that there wasn't any hot tea in his pocket. Thank God for that. He didn't wake up Daleks with the fucking thermos of tea.
Yeah, no. Instead, he goes into the incubation room and comes out with I think two Daleks strangling him
by
the neck.
What I absolutely love is that prior to that, they go to this incubation room and they see Daleks twice.
Yeah,
and both times you just see the actor's reaction.
Yeah.
To the Daleks, and I went. Is that because they didn't know what the Daleks were going to look like? But then they had that moment where he goes in. So it's like, why did you just show their faces? It would have been nice to see your little fish tank of Dalek.
Yeah, I don't think they could really afford to make them look like living things.
Because they look like freaking chicken cutlets.
Yeah.
Floating in water.
That's exactly what it looked like. It looked like he had strapped a couple of chicken
like
cutlets
fish.
To his neck. Yeah. But he lays some C4 in there to finally exterminate the Daleks. And then as soon as he gets the chance, he's got the two wires. He's just got to touch them.
He's got to touch them, but he's got too much. And this was after his conversation with Davros about the disease and if
he has a very long conversation about if Davros could kill everything, would he? Meanwhile, the doctor is tasked with just killing one race. And he locks up.
Well, because his justifications are not... bad.
Yeah.
In the future, there are lots of civilizations and worlds that become allies because of their hatred towards Dalek. And if Daleks aren't there, you wouldn't have those alliances.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who is he to decide to annihilate an entire species?
Yeah. There's a very interesting question there. Like, obviously, the Daleks are terrible. But if we know that their terribleness assuages, like, other horrors from happening, say that he knows that because of the Daleks, two worlds that were at war become allies. If the Daleks don't exist, they just, one of those two planets gets exterminated anyway. The Doctor is one of the only kinds of characters that can know that. He's not just doing it as hypothesizing. He knows it for a fact.
And it did remind me very much of the Hitler paradox of if you could go back in time,
yeah,
would you shoot or would you kill baby Hitler?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same sort of thing of like, there are so many other options that mm-hmm. sometimes the thing that you know is going to happen is better than the thing that you don't know is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that kind of undercuts it is that he doesn't really get to make that decision in the moment because he finds out that apparently Davros is about to be voted out of genocide.
Yeah, Davros is being a little sneaky sneak and is tricking everyone and is saying that he's going to surrender. As far as the insubordinates will know, he is going to surrender.
Yeah. And so he's like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do this. And so he, like, sets it down. But then later on, when he realizes that Davros has turned, he decides to do it anyway. And I don't know if that's a heel turn or if he's just so, like, heated in that moment. He's like, I can do it now. I don't have any more anxiety about this.
Yeah, he makes up his mind in that moment.
Yeah, but then he still doesn't have to do it because a Dalek is chasing after him. So he, like, hides around the corner and the Dalek starts shooting at him, I think. Like, he reaches a hand out and the Dalek's blaster fires, but the blaster doesn't seem to go anywhere. The Dalek is like he goes, ah, too hot.
It happens twice.
Yeah, it's very silly. And then the Dalek, instead of the Doctor, like, touching the wires together, the Dalek rolls over the wires, connecting the circuit and blowing the room up.
Which also, what a dumb science-y explanation for that. Like, it's so stupid. It makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's very silly. I mean, knowing also that the floor itself is made of metal, I feel like as soon as he drops the wires, it should have probably connected anyway.
Probably, but...
But that defeats the moral lesson they were trying to teach us.
Yeah, and you don't know how conductive the floors are.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing about it is that the Doctor is the one who has to make that decision. Meanwhile, Sarah is over his shoulder just telling him to do it.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Daleks, the most evil creatures ever invented. You must destroy them. You must complete your mission for the Time Lords.
Like, Jesus, Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah this whole time started an insurrection, tried to escape slavery.
Yeah.
Crawled up scaffolding, got shot down from scaffolding, continued to do her job, and then is rescued and runs free.
Yeah, and then after all that, finally gets to the room where they can blow up the Daleks and go home. And the Doctor's like, I don't know if I can do this, guys.
And she's just going, do it!
Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Yeah,
like, I do appreciate that of both companions. Sarah does seem to be the one that is the most, like, headstrong.
Yeah.
And nothing against Harry. He seems like a fine fellow.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite moments, just comparing Sarah and Harry, is that when the Doctor is finally reunited with them, when he thinks they've been blown up in the Khalid city, mm-hmm. He finally meets them again in that cave. He, like, hugs Sarah Jane very tightly, but then just shakes Harry's hand.
Yeah. No homo. No homo.
Good business.
Good business. Oh, going back a little bit, when Davros learns and understands, like, fully that the Doctor is from the future, he tries, like, roasting him for mm-hmm. information on how the Daleks are defeated, so that way he can, input strategy protocols, or he can input information so that way the Dalek can overcome the things that they've been defeated by mm-hmm. in the future. But I don't know how he could have put in any kind of protocols for falling down a well or stairs. That's so weird.
How do they come up with a protocol for one Dalek just looks at the sun and blows itself up?
Yeah.
I see the sun. Time to die.
Yeah.
And then I think the only other thing I really wanted to talk about was the MacGuffin of the story, the time ring that is given to him by the Time Lord. This time ring that is a full-on bracelet.
Yeah, that's not a ring.
Yeah, and it...
That's a time
just
gauntlet.
Has, like, a nice, like, little flower design on top of it, I think.
It's so pleasant.
And they... It will apparently return them to the TARDIS. Well, at least that's what they say, But at the end of the episode, instead they just all kind of grab it and spin around in a circle.
Which, I will say, a big issue I have with modern television is the lack of floating around. People don't float around nearly as much as they did in the 70s.
Oh man, I should show you the Fifth Doctor's first episode.
Is him just floating around?
Yeah, actually. He's discombobulated from regeneration, and so he goes into the Zero Room, which is literally just a room where he floats and spins around in it.
Incredible.
While his body settles.
Incredible. I also do like that before we even get to that, you do have Dalek does give a final speech after fucking killing its creator.
Yeah, which, staring dead into camera.
I'm so angry because I know that you've told me in the past that Daleks killed their creator. We've had this discussion before. We don't need to have it again. I'm just so angry I didn't remember that when I was making my guesses.
Mm-hmm.
Because Daleks are built to survive and to not take orders from anybody, not even their own creator. And as he's saying, have pity on me. Dalek does not have pity in vocabulary.
Dalek has no concept of pity.
Yeah, it's specifically that pity does not exist in Dalek's vocabulary.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, oh my God, these really are the worst things.
Yep. Well, because he programmed them to not have empathy or compassion.
No.
Their only instinct is to
survive.
Is to survive and conquer,
which will bring peace.
Yeah, when Daleks are the last thing standing, there will be no other race to fight them.
Oh, what will they do then?
Play tennis?
Dalek has no concept of tennis.
They'll replace one of their guns with a little bat, and they'll play baseball.
Dalek has no concept of baseball.
Or maybe cricket. Daleks do, in fact, enjoy cricket.
Yeah. But yeah, the final Dalek speech is just him staring directly into camera with just the little lights blinking.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, because the time ring is supposed to take them back to the TARDIS. You didn't really get to see the TARDIS set
The only way that I'm able to watch the TARDIS is on the menu screen of the DVD we're watching.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see that the next time we come into a classic episode.
Perhaps.
Because I definitely want to revisit it. I might even take a break in the middle of season 3 to get to some, just as a fun little trip.
Sure. Yeah, I did like this.
Yeah. It's a very different vibe. Partly because it has to be.
Well, yeah, it's a very different vibe. It also does, like, this 100% is something that I would have watched as a kid if the DVDs or VHSs existed.
Yeah.
With Doctor Who on it. Like, that's the biggest reason. Because I asked my dad about it recently, actually, why this was something that we never watched. Because I brought it up and said, like, this, like, you would really like it. I just didn't have a way of getting it and finding it.
Yeah, there were VHS tapes available, but I don't think they were very common in America.
Also, I need you to understand, most of the time, our movies came from Columbia House. Is that something you are at all familiar with?
I am not at all familiar
Columbia
with
House was like a catalog where you could get kind of like Criterion Collection, but a little bit more broad. So all of those Sid and Marty Krofft VHS Saturday morning tapes I have are Columbia House like exclusives.
Yeah.
So unless they had something that was Columbia House presents in association with BBC Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Then we would not have had those.
Yeah, because I know there were VHSs that were distributed. I don't know how commonplace they were in America. The most people that I know that fell in love with Classic Who found it airing on TV.
Yeah.
So that's how you would have found it.
But I didn't have cable.
Yeah, but you didn't. So, but I'm glad you really enjoyed this. It's nice knowing that if we come back to this, we'll probably go with a different doctor next time, but I definitely want to show you at least one other story from the Fourth Doctor, but that I'll wait on. I don't want to make it too central on that, but we'll see what we come back to.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to. And if there's one that anybody thinks that I would like in particular.
Yeah, let us know on our various social medias.
What are the names of those social medias, Zachary?
We're available on Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD.
See, I'm messing you up in the future because you usually do this when you're done editing.
Joke's on you. I'll do it anyway.
Oh, well. Whatever.
But next time we come back, we'll be looking at the second series for David Tennant, the third series of the Revive show, where you'll get to meet a new companion.
Okay. Neat.
Yeah, so let's look forward.
It's not canine, so I don't care. It's not canine or like a mini Dalek.
It's not canine, but there is another
Captain Jack.
He does come back in season 3.
Starts throwing things around the room.
But in the first episode back in particular, there's an alien race I think you might enjoy.
No. I'm so scared of alien races in this
This one I think you'll like. We'll get to them though. And we'll get to them.
No, like small friend Daleks.
Small friend Daleks.
Yeah, Zach.
Palix.
Mini Dalek. Mini doll. D-O-L-L-X.
Action figure X.
Yeah. Hey, Zach, what would that sound like?
Dalek has no concept of elegance.
Thank you.
Exterminate.
Thank you, yes.
Isn't it the least important?
This is slowly turning into Elmo.
Yeah, but also it's...
Dalek hits Rocco!
Oh my god! Dalek v. Rocco?
Well, let's...
Who would win, though? Dalek v. Rocco? Because I think Rocco might win. Because if Dalek doesn't understand that Rocco both is and isn't alive...
I mean, Rocco already beat Elmo. Who's to say what could stop Rocco?
Oh my god.
Well, let's get back to our modern series next time on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, I think one thing's for sure about Rocco v. Dalek. Whoever wins, we lose. And true to my word, I'm going to plug our social medias again. You can find us on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, and Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD. I have some ideas in mind for our next journey into the classic series, but I'd really like to hear what stories you'd like us to cover. Please leave us a like or 5 stars if you liked this episode, and be sure to subscribe, because next week we're going back to New Who to meet Martha Jones. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Who's Days.